Hey everyone, this is Martin Willis with Phyllis.
Hi.
We're here to do the Antique Podcast Show. I'm sorry we haven't done one for a couple of weeks. I had bad laryngitis. How's that for an excuse?
Yeah, he was in Tahiti vacationing.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Couldn't find any antique dealers in Tahiti. So anyway, we're here with Dave Churchill and Melinda Churchill from San Rafael, California. And they're antique dealers and estate dealers. And hi, Dave. Hi, Melinda.
Hello.
Hey, Martin. How are you, buddy?
We're doing good.
Nice to meet you, Phyllis. Nice to meet you, too.
So we're here, and Dave and Melinda have a shop. They opened, what, you said 11 years ago or so, something like that in total?
No,
the current
one,
seven.
But
yeah.
We've had many.
We've been
in San Rafael for about 12 years.
And as you can tell, Dave's accent, he's probably German or something. Where are you from, Dave?
Yeah, I'm from Brighton in England, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Melinda is from the area here in Marin County. And how did you two actually meet? Tell me, was it an antique show or something like that?
No, it wasn't. We just met at a friend's party. And,
a mutual friend.
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be something exciting here.
Nothing exciting about that.
Okay.
Now,
were one of you in antiques first, or did you become...
Yeah, I've been doing it since 1976.
76.
I don't know if I should admit that because I'm not a multimillionaire yet.
You're working on it. Yeah.
Slowly.
Yeah. So 1976 in England?
In England, yes. I was an antique dealer in England for about, only about 10 years because I came over here in 86 and liked the old city, so I stayed.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you come right here to California?
Yep. San Francisco was my first stop.
Yeah.
So we had a store in San Francisco in the 80s for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't mention the store on Divisadero before that,
We had stores in San Francisco for 6 or 7 years. And then I split from my brothers and left. They continued with that business. And I met Melinda. We went to live in Hawaii for a year.
Nice. Good idea.
And then we came back here, and we've been shooting around between here and Massachusetts and Hawaii for the last 15 years or so.
Oh. Now, are your brothers still in the business locally?
No. One of my brothers is, yeah. He's in the city.
He's still in the city?
Yeah,
in the business.
Still, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of...
He's one of those eBay guys.
One of those.
Yeah. I always think of England as lots of auctions and a lot more focus on antiques than here in the USA. Am I right about that?
Well, you would have been right 20 years ago, but they've been just sending all their stuff over here for the last few decades. So that there's actually more English antiques here than there are in England. It's so hard to find it over there now, you know?
In fact,
I know people that actually come up to places like Brimfield buying to take back to Europe.
Isn't that something? I never thought that would happen.
Backwards and forwards, man.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a little kid in the 70s, the containers, even back east, were coming in all the time. And there was a place called the Big E for England and up in Kennebunk, and they used to ship in 3 or 4 containers a month.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Have you encountered more interest in antiques in the layperson here rather than back in the Big E? Or has it
No. I think in most of Europe, people are probably a little bit more savvy about antiques in general, but then the American collectors are much more knowledgeable. They really get into it. So you know, when you find an American who's a collector and you know, they'd like to decorate with antiques, they've got really good knowledge. They really study hard. But I think with Europe, people don't like to change their decor every 5 years like a lot of people do here. You know, if you watch some of those TV programs, they're like ripping out the house and, oh, that's 1984, let's get rid of all that crap, you know. And they're ripping out the house and putting all new stuff in. In Europe, they tend not to do that so much. You know, they actually really like the older stuff, so it's kind of, you know, it's homey to them. And so they kind of live with it longer.
How about that? When I said earlier about auctions, I know in London, for instance, there's like an auction going on all the time. There's every day there's auctions.
Every day there's an auction. Yeah.
And it's just not so here in this country. I mean,
not
anywhere near as much. People think more in the auction way there than they do here.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. In fact, there are people I know that They don't buy anywhere else or sell anywhere else, only at auctions.
Mm-hmm.
They buy at one auction and they'll take it to another auction where they know they can make
they place it. Yeah. They place it in the right place.
In fact, there's a guy here who's actually from Scotland. He lives up in Sonoma County. He was an auctioneer back in Glasgow 40 years ago.
Mm.
And he ran an auction up in Sonoma County for a while. Now kind of retired. But
interesting.
He would buy in Europe, bring stuff here, sell it in his auction, and he will buy things in his auction and send it back to Europe. And
Well, it reminds me of a conversation we had before this podcast, and you were talking about the knowledge you have in your head, how you can survive in this business.
That's all you've got. And people say, how's the shop doing, or, you know, whatever. The shop doesn't make any difference. It's just part of what you do.
Hmm.
In this business, you're not just a retail shopkeeper if you have an antique store. You know, you do shows, and occasionally you do flea markets. We know you, we all do. You see the biggest guys occasionally selling at the flea market. They might go out of the county, but you'll bump into them. So, the business is in your head.
Yeah.
All the numbers are in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you know, whatever's on the computer is kind of relevant, but was what... Your main computer is your head. You learn, you keep sucking in information, and you know, no matter what happens in this business, if you're ready to evolve with it, you know, like we're in a recession now, but we're all doing okay.
Yeah, we are.
You know, all the old timers are still doing okay because we've been through it before. Mm-hmm. We know it's going to be over, and now when things are really the prices are down, what are we doing? We're picking stuff,
sure,
and storing it, and waiting for the good times to come back, and they will.
Mm-hmm. There's a saying I heard somewhere, and I totally believe in it, when you talk about recession, and that is people will not spend money for only so long. What I'm saying is people end up getting fed up not spending their money, and they'll finally start to let loose of it. And
they want to have a blast. They want to have some fun.
Yeah. Now, do you specialize in anything, either one of you?
We like the estate jewelry.
Jewelry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about... Both of you are into estate jewelry?
I'm into all kinds of things, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I found that it's best not to... You know, if I spent my life studying one section of the business, I think I would get bored with that. You know, I'm much more interested in... I say I specialize in buying stuff. You know? Uh-huh. That's the key to the business, buying right.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if it could be a $500 item you bought for $100... or a $10,000 item you bought for two.
Mm-hmm.
You got it for two, you're doing all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Did you do estate jewelry in England?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jewelry, I've always found to be the kind of the backbone for me.
Mm.
It's so easy to carry.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You don't have to worry about
break your back.
And, you know, if a piece is interesting and it needs a little repair, it's usually not very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you don't have to wait too long for
mm-hmm.
it. And yeah, you can slap a couple of hundred grand in your case. Mm-hmm. You're going to a show in the other side of the country. You don't need to drive. You can just fly over with a suitcase for the start.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I was at an auction house where this guy was shipping over from France, you know, a big container. And the thought occurred to me as I was watching like eight people unload this whole container and how much labor it was and unwrapping all the cardboard. That guy could have sent over one single painting or, you know, something small for the same amount of money that he got for the entire labor that he went through. You know, and a lot of times you think of, you know, it sounds silly, but a postage stamp auction would be kind of fun just because you carry it in your wallet, you know, and you have a whole auction out of it.
Yeah.
I think you get like a purist who just likes something like furniture, and that would be the type of person that would send a whole container over.
Yeah,
it's their babies that they hand-picked, and they know all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, it really has to be interest-driven to pay for real estate like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're 100% right. I mean, people that are interested in furniture are interested in furniture, and really, sometimes that's the only thing they're interested in.
Yeah.
And live and breathe it.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
I've lots of made a lot of money out of it. Mm-hmm. Too.
That's right. Yeah.
You can't. You know, the pianist is not going to love the flute, you know, if that was easier to carry.
Yeah. Melinda, did you start in this? What did you do before before you met Dave?
I did a little bit of graphic design and I was pretty young at the time. I didn't have a career.
Mm-hmm.
And we met, and he became my career, basically.
Now, did you take...
Keeping me out of trouble.
It's a full-time job. Yeah. Now, did you take to the antique business right away?
Pretty soon after.
So now, why don't you describe what a typical day is for
day
you?
Day in the life of the Churchills.
What, I know you have a shop. You keep it certain hours.
No, we don't.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Now that the gold rush is kind of petering out.
You want to explain what you mean by that?
Well, you know, the price of gold has been high for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And we took advantage of that a couple of years ago. We started running ads to buy gold and jewelry. So we kept our shop open for 5 days a week for that period. But now that that's kind of petering out, you know, the boom is over because most of the people have sold their goldness. Of course, there's still lots more out there, but now it's coming out at a much lower rate. So
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be sitting in that store waiting for that, you know. So
now
we're not running the shop as a retail store. Like I said, the store is just a small part of it. So what we're doing now is we've just built a website, angelestatesantiques.com.
I was going to ask you, www.
Yeah.
AngelEstatesAntiques.com. And, you know, that's kind of like a beginning site at the moment. You've looked at it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got just half a dozen items on there. And I'm just starting to learn how to actually load items on there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys give me a red book and instructions and stuff. And I'm probably going to need two more lessons. But within 6 months, I'll probably have 100 items on there. And so we're going to do a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than why sit in a store when you can just have your store out there for everybody to see. It's like having a shop in the sky, really, you know.
Yeah.
Now, didn't you tell me, I ran into you at an antique show, Hillsborough, and I saw you had a James Everett Stewart. And didn't you say you bought a slew of those?
Yeah, I think we bought 32 of those from
oh, my gosh.
True.
You know, the funny thing was, the guy that, he came in first with a bag of gold.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, I see you buy paintings. So I said, yeah, what do you have? So we went to his house, and he'd been married to this lady for 30 years. And even before she knew him, she'd been collecting James Everett Stewart paintings for some reason. She was kind of into them.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died a couple of years ago. And now he was, I don't like these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he kept one for posterity, but he said, give me a price for everything. So we did.
And now we still have many
stories.
Well, you know, James...
We still have 20 of them.
Oh,
wow. Well, James Everett Stewart was a grandson of Gilbert Stewart. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that. And he painted, some people say he painted 10,000 paintings in his lifetime. And he's a California artist, and I've seen a lot of his paintings. He painted on two levels. He painted a real nice academic level, and then he painted pretty loose. And every single one of his paintings are numbered on the back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then some of them have enormous prices on them that he wrote in, say, the early 1900s. He'd put $10,000 on a painting.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
On something that doesn't make...
It's not worth $500 today.
You know.
No,
he was a real ladies' man, apparently, too. You know,
really?
He had two or three galleries in different parts of the country at different times, and he used to, because he was from a fairly well-to-do family. He wasn't like a working-class painter. He was one of these guys that got set up easily in the beginning, and he had his own galleries and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to play around with some of his wealthy clients' wives.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
And
the life of an artist.
The life of a sharp-minded artist. Yeah. So he had that going on, but God knows how much he actually used to sell his paintings for. But he sold thousands of them.
Mm.
Mm.
I think one out of the 30 or so that we've got two or three that are numbered in the 3,000 something. So I know that, and they're from the 1920s. So.
You think about when someone numbers their paintings, they never started at the beginning. In other words, he probably had a large body of work before he started numbering them.
We have one that's 100 and something.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Either we had it or we still sold it. Did we sell that?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So you get into all kinds of things.
Well, you get into all kinds of trouble, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you may or may not want to answer this, and I can edit it out if you want, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
No, I've never killed anybody.
That's one way to get in the state. No, what's your best find?
My wife.
Oh, aww. My God.
We have I can't edit that out. We have to save it for next February.
You know,
he just bought some points there, I'll tell you that.
Let me just get back to that. I tell you what, there are burglars and fences in this business, as we all know. They're all stupid, of course. But now and then they'll come into the store, one of these people, and they'll say the most stupid things like, oh, what's the most expensive thing you've got in it? Because they don't know what they're looking at. Mm. They want you to tell them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they'll, you know, one of the little crew will come back and steal it, you know.
Mm.
And so I used to just, I realized that's what they were up to, you know, a long time ago. But and now when they come in and say that, they say, you know, what's the most valuable thing in the shop? I just say, my brain, man.
Nice.
Better watch it. That's very steal cool. that, you know.
Yeah.
And then I tell them, you know, that's the first question burglars always ask. That scares them off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good.
So you're really not going to answer that question I asked you. So.
I think I did.
Hi, Marty.
You know what? I think that the most interesting things we've ever bought are things that we haven't actually sold yet. So.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. Chinese porcelain, things like that.
You guys really are into everything.
You may see soon.
That's a whole field unto itself.
Yeah.
You know, I did a podcast with Malcolm Gutter about mice, and I was talking about how these things can be so valuable yet breakable. And he says, well, look at some Chinese ceramics can be $2 million. You know, I mean, you get the right piece.
$20 million even.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get the right piece and home run.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go.
And the stuff floated all over the world. It's everywhere.
You know what, dude? There are pieces like that sitting around here in the Bay Area just waiting for someone to find them.
That's right. I totally believe that.
And getting back to what Martin asked about what a typical day is, the first thing when we wake up in the morning, your drive of wanting to get up is, I wonder what I'm going to find today.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, you know, who I'm going to meet or what's going to happen. Because there's still anticipation that you might have that great find or, you know, something interesting will happen and you'll learn something new.
Mm. Yeah.
Just like Dave Shaw, but they're so much more civilized.
Sorry,
Dave Shaw. Dave Shaw was someone we interviewed, a first or second interview. He's a madman, but he said basically the same thing.
Like, he's crazy.
He just gets up and decides, well, am I going to get up and work today? Or, you know, sometimes I don't feel like it, so I just stay home.
That's the freedom. Then, but much more interesting to get out there. You know, the thing is, you could be planning your day. Even over breakfast, we could be sitting there talking about, well, where are we going to go? Should we go up to Sonoma? Should we go to the city? You know, what are we going to do today? Mm-hmm. Should we go to an auction or what? You know, and you're walking out the door or you've driven two blocks and the phone rings.
Mm-hmm.
And someone says, well, can you come over and take a look at this stuff? And, you know, you end up somewhere you'd never intended to go, buying a load of stuff, and then...
I say that's in the auction business, same thing.
That's exactly the same, yeah.
And you know
you've
what?
You've got to be ready to cancel whatever you're doing to go to that house.
Right.
You have to pick the biggest fish sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but I got to tell you, I love that life.
Me too.
I love that part of the business because it's not doing the day-to-day thing, and, you know, it's not predictable. And we all have a little bit of treasure hunt in us, I think, you know. I don't always think of monetarily. I really like to find something really nice for auction, just to find it, just to hold it in my hands. It's really, it's pretty exciting.
We're all pirates.
Pirates.
Do you enjoy the lifestyle, too?
I do, yeah, I do.
Melinda's got a great eye. She's got a great eye for detail. You know, if we walk into an estate sale, you know, I flash through the room. My eyes just scan really quickly, and if I see something I want, I go straight to that. And I look around, and Melinda's in the corner, you know, looking in a tray of jewelry or something, and she goes through everything methodically. And she usually comes out with more stuff than me.
Mm.
So the yin and the yang, you guys.
Yeah, we are.
And another interesting thing, too, for me, is sometimes I don't feel like I'm even looking with my eyes. It's just like you're there, you're concentrating so hard, and you're, it's like something's being drawn to you, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it is. It happens.
Yeah.
So where are we all feeling about the state of the antiques economy right now? Personally, I'm feeling...
Are you interviewing me? That's great. No, that's good.
I want to know how you feel and how all the other people out there feel too. You know, you get responses to this too.
Well, right? Yeah. Oh yes, we do. We get emails, and
I think we're at the bottom now, and we're moving up.
I believe you're right. And by the way, we just got a really nice email from someone that said they enjoy our podcast more than the Antiques Roadshow. Isn't that nice? Thank you. So I want to say, I don't want to say that we're at the bottom. I think we're at...
Yeah, moving up again.
Yeah.
We've bottomed down and we're creeping up.
I think so.
I think auctions, what I'm seeing now, this date, we're in the first part of March 2010, and I'm going to say auction prices right now are very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They're also still sporadic, which is... kind of the sign of the times.
Yeah.
But I still say that I've been watching around what's going on, and I think they're very, very strong prices right now.
I've been very optimistic in cataloging every day, more optimistic.
Yeah, I feel that it's still a time for people to snap up some bargains.
Sure.
You know, prices are really, are still low compared with 3 or 4 years ago, but it's moving back up, and, you know, if you, anybody that's out there looking to actually invest in some nice antique, this is the time to get something, and in a couple of years you can make 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm. Buy what's out of trend is what I say. Right now is a good time to buy what's not in trend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can get...
Buy Imari. Come to my shop. I've got lots of Imari.
He's got too much Imari.
Buy Japanese now. That's
true. Because Japanese art is really beautiful, and unfortunately it's undervalued.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it will come back.
Yep.
That will come back too.
Definitely,
it all does.
Yep.
You know,
it cycles.
In the 30-something years I've been doing this, I've noticed, 35 years, I have noticed that thing that is cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
That arts and crafts was hot in the 70s, and it was hot 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's kind of nowhere, but it'll come back in 10 years again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just waiting for Art Deco to come back.
Yeah. Well, the good Art Deco, just like... Good arts and
the great
crafts.
Stuff. Yeah.
Very, very strong.
Yeah, but when the general population gets into it again, because it's such beautiful stuff. And Nouveau.
Very unique.
I
love those.
And Deco to come back, too.
Yeah. I like them.
Yeah.
I really think there's no more unique design than Art Deco myself.
Right.
Pretty wild. I mean, architecturally.
It's better than the modernist stuff, personally, I feel. You know.
Yeah.
It'll come back.
It will. And so, Dave, we were talking earlier, before the podcast, about people that... don't want to pay the commission to have something professionally done. Let's talk about that a little more.
Generally, those are cheapskate people, right? they don't want to pay anybody for anything. So,
right.
And you get that feeling from them with experience. You get that feeling from them early on, you know.
Right.
And, you know, they've got the sheet of paper and they want to get all the prices from you, and then they don't want you to do the job after you've spent 4 or 5 hours going for this stupid house, you know.
Right.
So that sort of thing happens, and it's just... what you want to do really in those sort of circumstances is, once you realize that that's what they are, is to get them to sign the contract.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't want to go, you know, I've spent an hour with you, you know, and if we're going to go ahead and do this deal, let's get everything signed up.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to do it, well then, you know, you don't want to waste any more time with them, do you?
Mm.
Yeah.
And we'll get that with people with they bring in a bunch of jewelry, you know, and they'll get 2 or 3 pieces out, and you'll offer them prices on it. They say, okay, well, let me think about that, and they start getting everything else out. They want you to give them a free appraisal on 50 items and waste 2 or 3 hours of your time, and they don't want to sell anything to you.
I
usually stop them after 2 or 3 items and say, you know, if we're not actually selling things, I'd rather be reading the paper.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you want to sell it or you don't, fine. When you want to sell it, come back. So that's the whole thing about that, you know, people consigning things too. They don't want to pay the 20% commission or whatever it is, and then they turn around and do the estate sale themselves
and make a bunch of mistakes.
And if you've realized what they're up to earlier on, then you haven't given them a free appraisal on everything in the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then they want to go and do the estate sale themselves. Then you walk in and buy all the good stuff really cheap because they don't know what they're doing and they think they do.
Yeah.
How many times have you gone into, you know, this is what you do. You go into a house and it's nice and clean. It's all cleaned up. And there are just these things on the tables and where's all the junk? Oh, we cleaned it up. We threw all the stuff out of the kitchen. We threw all the stuff out of the garage. We threw away all the stuff that was in the basement. We cleaned out all the drawers and dumped all that stuff. They probably threw away the best stuff and they don't know it.
Sure. Yeah.
Anybody that's out there listening to this, if you're going to have an estate sale, somebody in your family is going to die sooner or later and you're going to have to deal with it. Don't throw anything away until the appraiser's been, because you really, absolutely don't know what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. That's I'll tell you a real quick case in point. One time I went to a house and they were in the process of dumping it, and they were like, they already went many, many times to the dump. And I walked over to the pickup truck and I pulled out a Maria pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, did you throw away similar ones to these?
Oh, dear.
And they said, I don't know, I guess so, you know. So ended up, I decided to make a count of what they had in the back of their truck, and it was $10,000 in the back of the truck
is what
I sold for them. By the time I got done with the pot, and I remember there were some period smalls, and there was antique toys that were German toys that it still had the price tag on them from like 1900, 1910.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing thing, and I just, you know, wonder what went out of that.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, we went to a sale just a few weeks ago. They wanted us to come and look at the stuff. We walk in, it's all 1940s rubbish in the house, but it's all clean. And I know they've thrown away all the good stuff.
Yeah.
I said, what did you throw away? What did you dump? Oh, nothing. It's just, you know, probably all the gold and silver.
Just those silly Tiffany lamps and things like that.
Yeah. That thing about, you know, leave it to the experts when it comes to selling the stuff. You know, that's what we're here for. And, you know, 20% of $10,000 is better than 100% of $3,000.
Yeah.
So let the experts do the job, right?
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, people will, you know, end up thinking they're going to save a lot of money and then shoot themselves in the foot. You see it all the time, over and over again. And if that wasn't the case, then there wouldn't be people out there making a very good living off of people's mistakes.
Yeah.
And there's lots and lots and lots of people making.
I bet the 1-800 junk guy gets stacks of great stuff. Wouldn't you think, you know?
Well, you were looking earlier at this painting right over here.
Yeah.
And it's a nice English watercolor. And I had a guy stop by here and said, I took this out of the dump.
Yeah.
And I gave him $400 cash for it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was, you know, and that's what. You know, he said, oh, you can't believe what else was there. And I said, go get it. But there is a lot of people in Marin. Now, I know the situation here in Marin, and I believe it was San Rafael, where a girl in the East Bay was, quote, unquote, her own quotes, dumpster diving.
Mm-hmm.
When she saw, she pulled over, she saw these people throwing stuff away. She found photos, black and white photos. I can't think of the artist's name right now. They sold for over $100,000, and they were just thrown in the dumpster.
Yeah, there you go.
Gosh.
Yeah, one of the guys who used to buy from a while back was a garbage collector.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to have a garage sale a couple of times every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we always looked forward to his sales. You know? And we'd go the day before and say, well, what have you got? Mm-hmm. He'd come out with these huge glass jars full of watches. I mean, the first time I found him, he had a huge glass jar full of, you know, men's wristwatches that he just pulled them out of the garbage.
Unbelievable.
And we spent a lot of money with him over the years, and now he's an antique dealer.
Yeah.
Well, what a segue. There was a guy back east when I had my auction business back there, and he has a rubbish removal company.
Yeah.
And bunches of trucks for him. And he called me up one day and he said, you know, I pull things out that are interesting. He says, I can't be home, but I got them all sitting out in front of my garage. He says, gave me his address. I went over there, and just one piece alone was a Farum, which is a painting on velvet from early 1800s, and it was $3,500 at the time.
Wow.
You know, but all the stuff he had such an eye. I'm thinking, what are you doing, you know, in this garbage business when you
coming
out?
Stuff free.
He knew what he was doing.
He was getting stuff for nothing.
Yeah. Then there was another guy in the same town that delivered oil. And when people couldn't pay him, he traded them for antiques.
Sure, yeah.
And he gave me a Aaron Willard banjo clock, a really good one. You know, most of the type of things he was trading oil for.
Some people just have an eye. They have no idea what they're looking at, but they know it's,
they know it's something.
Somehow,
they know. That's the idea.
I think you can go far with that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it comes to artwork, which is always tricky. You know, I mean, people... I know we're bouncing all around, but if you think about artwork, a lot of people will look at a painting that's not signed and say, forget it. And some of the best paintings in the world aren't signed.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, and...
Especially a lot of those itinerant artists, you know, used to do the portraits of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of those guys were illiterate. They didn't sign because they didn't know how to. They didn't put any information on the back of their paintings because they couldn't write. You know?
Mm-hmm. So, I never thought of that angle, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, one good thing I've heard, a good piece of advice I heard recently was, you know, if you have a good eye, you don't necessarily know what you're looking at, but you think it's good, you should just buy it, you know, assuming it's cheap, you know.
Yeah.
Just pay them, you know, $50, $30, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just buy it and then turn it over to someone, you know, who knows what they're talking about. And even if you can't, you know, even if you don't want to admit that you don't know what it is, you'll just say, hey, you know, I picked this up the other day. Why don't you sell it for me? And we'll just go, you know, just go half on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, no one has to know anything. And you make fun of it.
Well, when you're paying $30 for something, the worst case scenario, you lose $30.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
Yeah. You don't
lose a couple of movies.
Nothing's worth nothing in this game.
Yeah.
Now, if you buy something for $30 and you're taking a chance... You know, the worst way in the world, you're probably going to get 10 or 15 for it.
Right.
You know, so you lose a few bucks, but you learn something.
Yeah.
Mm.
Next time you'll buy it for $2.
It's cheaper than college tuition.
Yeah.
Learning that way.
Yeah. That's one of the other things about this business is, you know, one of our friends, he works on the principle, when he's out buying at places like flea markets and antique shows and things, sayings is, when I look at it, if I'm not sure, I say to myself, can I at least get my money back?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if I think I'm close to getting my money back, I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I lose 10, 20%, now and then it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But 80% of the time, I'm making money.
Yeah.
That's a great philosophy, I think.
Yeah.
Go for it. Especially if it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How many times?
$1,000 and you're looking at it and you're thinking, maybe 800, maybe 3 grand,
mm-hmm.
buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Pay the $1,000. Take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
How many times, I know for myself, have I walked away from something and went, oops, and go back the next day and it's gone.
Right.
It's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if
probably the guy right behind you snapped it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Laughed this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, if you go into a place or whatever and someone is like focusing on something and all of a sudden you're focusing on it because, you know, they may know something that you don't know or something
right,
like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get all caught up in that.
When you start paying attention to it, then he's going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have a shop you have a place you call a shop, right?
No.
Have you ever put, like, sold on something and had someone come in and had to have
always.
It?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best way to resell
something. Just what I wanted.
Yeah,
yeah right.
Yeah.
I don't know why they say that. I did, but I guess it's just... maybe there's a little jealousy there, or maybe they think they just missed the only bargain in the shop. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it.
Psychological.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all psychological.
Yeah, it's all
the whole businesses. And you talk about buying. That's your strong point, which I believe it is. Now, what about selling? Do you? I know you don't have a world of things, but do you sell in different venues?
Yeah, we sell at antique shows. We do sell in our store. You know, we have... periods where we are open for several days at a time. We'll advertise for that, but we also do we do the odd flea market too. We sell on eBay,
mm-hmm.
and like I say, we now have the website, which we hope is going to be profitable eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like you and everybody else in the business, We have contacts that specialize in different things, and
sure.
Sometimes you just bought something and you sold it over the phone in 5 minutes. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's the best kind.
Yeah.
Mm.
Or you'll go. You know, you'll be going to do a flea market, and you know who's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll leave stuff in the back of your van or whatever, and when this person shows up, you sell them all those items and you've made your day. You know?
All networking. Yeah. Now,
I really believe in flea markets. It's the easiest way to sell.
Uh-huh.
It's the cheapest way to sell. You know, your rent's usually between $30 and $100.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and quite often you can, you know, if you've taken $4,000 or $5,000 by 9 o'clock in the morning, you're on your way home.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, do you do the one in Alameda here?
Not in many years.
We haven't done that in 2 or 3 years because they make you stay there till 3 o'clock. I don't like that.
Okay.
I like to go when I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know.
Now, what about Brimfield? You did that once.
We've done that several times. Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We also do one down in the city here at Alamini Boulevard.
It's
right just off of 101 mm-hmm. at the 280 split.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Some now, I didn't mean
get
to
down
make
at 5:30. No, I wanted to say that because you know, you guys should hit that place.
All right, well, I'll talk about that after the podcast.
I'll leave it on the podcast.
Yeah. Now, Brimfield, I didn't mean to make it sound like a flea market. Brimfield is, for those people listening out here on the West Coast.
Flea market's a bad word. They're all antiques markets as well.
Well, that is something else. I say if anyone's back on the East Coast, Brimfield is something to check out. You'll never see anything like it.
I mean, that's great.
Seems like 1,000 acres of antiques and dealers. And
yeah. The first time we went, somebody recommended it to us. Another English guy who was living here, he used to live in Mass. He said, you know, you guys, if you ever get up east, he said you should go to Brimfield. And then Bert at San Rafael Auction told me he often goes up there.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave us the info on what to do if you go.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually loaded up our van at the time and drove all the way across the country.
3,000 miles.
3,000 miles to do it.
Wow.
We took a lot of money in, 4 days, wasn't it? And we were going to stay in New York.
Mm-hmm.
We said, if we take this certain number, mm-hmm. we'll go over to New York for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't quite hit that,
mm-hmm.
and we were tired. So I said, well, okay, well, let's just drive back, because we don't want to spend a week in New York and spend like $5,000-$8,000, because, you know, that cuts into what we made.
Mm-hmm.
If we made another $10,000, we would have done it, but we didn't. So
mm-hmm.
we started driving back, and that was when those two planes
yeah. hit
the Twin Towers.
Wow.
We would have been in Manhattan on the
oh my gosh
on July the on 9/11. Yeah,
wow.
September 11th.
And we heard about it right in the middle of Wyoming, didn't we?
And originally we were going to fly too, and at least one person from San Rafael was on one of the planes.
That's
too.
Right, it was on one of those planes.
So,
oh, wow.
All kinds of weird things could happen.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we decided to drive because we had some nice American furniture, and we wanted to make sure we took that. And
mm-hmm.
it sold really quickly for cash.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Cash is king.
Cash is king.
Yeah. So, what is your take on the future of this crazy business?
I think all the time there are people out there with taste, and there are lots of people with taste. We've got nothing to worry about.
Mm.
You know, we've heard all this recession stuff before. It's, you know, everything's just temporary.
I have something to say too.
Go ahead.
People like an object that feels like it has history or it has a legacy from being from your family. And so there'll always be some demand to have those items in your life and to covet them and buy them. And I think it's something I'll hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's not, it's, you know, apart from the fact that most antiques do slowly improve in value as the years go by, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it's really about the beauty, don't you think?
Yeah.
About the quality of life and the quality of the items that you can afford to live with.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my things, when people say that they want to start collecting antiques or they want to start dealing in antiques, one of my recommendations is if you're collecting, don't start buying the $10 stuff, you know. Save some money and buy something really nice.
Sure.
You know, something that you put it on your mantelpiece or hang it on your, you know, if you whatever your budget is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you like a specific type of painting, for instance, you know, get some money together and buy a good one.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And now, I get a little sentimental about certain things, but it's kind of funny how I am about. A lot of times you're talking about the beauty and how it was made, and a lot of times I'll look at a really nice 200-year-old piece of furniture, let's say, and I'll think about the hands that made that they had and what the world was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of it kind of deeply when I'm thinking about antiques. And, you know, I don't know exactly if a lot of people think that way or something like that, but to me, the tools that they had and what they had to work with, the lighting, for instance,
yeah.
You know, everything. Oil lamps and you know, the apprentices and the, you know, taught from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. It's all really fascinating to me.
Cutting up pieces of furniture by hand, you know, everything handmade. Yeah.
Starting with the tree plants.
I've often had that feeling about, you know, that it's like some things feel like a time machine, you know.
Right. Mm.
I remember many years ago when I was first in this business, I bought a 1563 sixpence.
Mm.
English with Queen Elizabeth I's head on it, you know.
Wow.
And I sat there the first night and I passed it around my wife and my kids, and we were all looking at it. We were all talking about, well, what could you buy for that? It's 1563,
mm.
You know. And over the centuries, how many things is that bought?
Yeah.
You know, what?
Mm-hmm.
And who must have handled it? You know, all the different people.
Mm.
And you know, you do get a feeling. You just get little flashes. I'm not saying it's anything psychic or anything like that. You get little feelings of, you know, you get a sense of the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It does. It's definitely like a little time machine in that way that, you know, you get it. If you start thinking about it, you know, you watch, for instance, movies about things like Queen Elizabeth I, for instance. But do you ever sit down and think about what life must have been really like for people?
Mm.
Mm. I do, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that those objects make the history more tangible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Puts you right back there.
Yeah.
Those people are long gone that were involved in that, and so were their grandchildren. You know what I mean?
And all the life that happened in between.
Mm-hmm. 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 All, you think of a dining room table, all the Thanksgivings, and, well, Thanksgiving's only since Civil War. But you think of all the dinners and the talking and all the things.
Yeah.
Makes it pretty sweet when you think about it.
What's your ethnic origin?
My parents are from Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. You know, do your parents have any antiques?
Yes.
Yeah?
And my maternal grandfather definitely, he became quite a, well, he's still around, but the past couple decades he's become very obsessed with collecting antiques, Chinese antiques specifically.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Chinese antiques are hot right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great market for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Call me. I need Chinese vases.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're just about going to wrap it up here.
Okay.
And so this is Dave Churchill, Melinda Churchill, Phyllis Cao, and Martin Willis, and we are signing...